Adventure of the Three Students. In 1895, Mr. Sherlock Holmes and I spent some weeks in one of our great university towns. It was during this time that the facts which I'm going to tell you about took place. One evening, we received a visit from a certain Mr. Hilton Soames, a lecturer at the College of St. Luke's. Mr. Soames was so excited that it was clear that something very unusual had happened. "I hope, Mr. Holmes," he said, "that you can give me a few hours of your time. A very unpleasant thing has taken place at our college, and I don't know what to do." "I'm very busy just now," my friend answered. "Could you call the police?" "No, no, my dear sir, that is absolutely impossible. It is just one of these cases when it is quite necessary to avoid scandal. I am sure you will keep our secret. You are the only man in the world who can help me. I beg you, Mr. Holmes, to do what you can." Holmes agreed, though very unwillingly, and our visitor began his story. "I must explain to you, Mr. Holmes," he said, "that tomorrow is the first day of the examination for the Fortescue Scholarship. I am one of the examiners. My subject is Greek. The first of the examination papers consists of a piece of Greek translation which the candidates for the scholarship have not seen before. Of course, every candidate would be happy if he could see it before the examination and prepare in advance. So much care is taken to keep it secret." "Today, at about 3 o'clock, I was reading the proofs of the examination papers. At 4:30, I went out to take tea in a friend's room, and I left the papers upon my desk. I was absent a little more than an hour. When I approached my door, I was surprised to see a key in it. For a moment, I thought I'd left my own key there, but when I put my hand in my pocket, I found the key in it. The other key to my room belonged to my servant, Bannister, who has been looking after my room for 10 years. I'm absolutely sure of his honesty. I understood that he had entered my room to ask if I wanted tea. When he saw I was not there, he went out and very carelessly left the key in the door. The moment I looked at my table, I knew that someone had touched the examination papers. There were 3 pages to it. I had left them all together. Now I found that one of them was lying on the floor. One was on a small table near the window, and the third was where I'd left it on my desk. Holmes spoke for the first time. "The first page on the floor, the second near the window, and the third where you left it," he repeated. "Exactly, Mr. Holmes. But how could you know that? Please, continue your very interesting story." "I did not know what to think. Bannister said he had not touched the papers, and I'm sure he speaks the truth. Then I thought that some student passing by my door had noticed the key in it. Knowing that I was out, he'd entered to look at the papers. The Fortescue Scholarship is a large sum of money, so the student was ready to run a risk in order to get it. Bannister was very much upset by the incident. He nearly fainted when I told him that someone had touched the examination papers. I gave him a little brandy and left him in his chair while I made the most careful examination of the room. I soon saw other traces of the man who had been in my room. Evidently, the man had copied the paper in a great hurry. My writing table is quite new, and I found a cut on it about 3 inches long. Not only this, but on the table I found a small black ball of something like clay or earth and some sawdust. I'm sure that these marks were left by the man who touched the examination papers, but there were no traces of his footsteps. I didn't know what to do next, when suddenly the happy thought came into my head that you were in town, so I came straight to you to put the matter into your hands. Do help me, Mr. Holmes. You see, my dilemma... either I find the man, or the examination must be put off until new papers are prepared. But this cannot be done without explanations, and a terrible scandal will follow. This will throw a cloud, not only on the college, but on the university. I shall be happy to look into the matter, and give as much help as I can, said Holmes, rising and putting on his overcoat. The case is not without interest. Did anyone visit you in your room after the papers had come to you? Yes, said Mr. Soames. Young Daulat Ras, an Indian student who lives on the same floor, came over to ask me a question about some of the details of the examination. The examination which he is going to take? Yes. And the papers were on your table? Yes. But as far as I remember, they were rolled up. Did anyone else come to your room? No. Did anyone know that the papers would be there? No one. Did this man Bannister know? No, certainly not. No one knew. Where is Bannister now? He was very ill, poor man. I left him in my room. I was in a hurry to come to you. So you left the door open? Yes, but I locked up the papers first. Well, it seems, Mr. Soames, that the man who touched your papers came upon them without knowing they were there. So it seems to me, said Mr. Soames. Let's go to your room now, Mr. Soames. I am at your service. All right, Watson. Come with us if you want to. It was already getting dark when we entered the courtyard of the old college. The window of our client's sitting room opened onto it. Holmes approached the window. Then he stood on tiptoe in order to look inside. He must have entered through the door, said Mr. Soames. The window doesn't open. Well, said Holmes, laughing, if there's nothing to be learned here, we'd better go inside. The lecturer unlocked his door, and we went in. Your servant seems to have felt better, said Holmes. He's not here. You left him by the chair, you say? Which chair? By the window over there. I see. Near this little table. Of course, what has happened is quite clear. The man entered and took the papers page by page from your writing table. He carried them over to the window table because there he could see if you came across the courtyard. He couldn't see me, said Soames, for I entered by the side door. Ah, that's good, said Holmes. Well, he carried the first page over to the window and copied it. Then he threw it down and took the next one. He was copying it when your return made him go away in a hurry. He had no time to put the papers back. Did you hear any hurrying steps on the stairs as you came up to the door? No, I didn't. Well, Sherlock Holmes went on, I don't think we can learn anything more from this table. Let's examine the writing table. The man left no traces on it except some clay and sawdust. Dear me, this is very interesting. And the cut? I see. Where does that door lead to? Holmes asked suddenly. To my bedroom, answered Soames. I should like to have a look at it, said Holmes. He entered the bedroom and examined it carefully. No, I see nothing, he said. What about this curtain? Oh, you hang your clothes behind it. If anyone has to conceal himself in the room, he must do it there. The bed is too low. No one there, I suppose. And he drew the curtain. It seemed to me that he was prepared to find somebody behind the curtain and to act quickly. No one, said Holmes. But what's this? And he picked up from the floor a small ball of black clay, exactly like the one upon the table. Your visitor seems to have left traces in your bedroom as well as your sitting room, he said. Do you mean to tell me that he was in my bedroom? What for? Asked Mr. Soames. I think it's clear enough, answered Holmes. You came back by the side door while he was sure that you would come across the courtyard, so he did not see you coming back. and he was copying the paper until he heard your steps at the very door. What could he do? He caught up everything he had with him, and he rushed into your bedroom to hide himself. Good God! Mr. Holmes, do you mean to tell me that all the time I was talking to Bannister, we had the criminal in my bedroom? So I understand it. Perhaps he got out by the window, began Mr. Soames. But Holmes shook his head impatiently. I think you have told me, he said, that there are three students who use the stairs and pass your door. Yes, there are. And they are all going to take the examination? Yes. Who are they? Asked Holmes. The first floor, began Soames, is occupied by a fine student and athlete. He plays cricket for the college and is a prize winner for the long jump. He is a fine young fellow. His father was very rich, but lost all his money in horse racing. He died, and young Gilchrist was left very poor. But he is hard working and will do well. The second floor, continued Mr. Soames, is occupied by Daulat Ras, the Indian. He's a very quiet fellow, very hard-working, too, though his Greek is his weak subject. The top floor belongs to Miles McLaren. He is a brilliant fellow when he wants to work, one of the brightest intellects of the university. But his conduct is very bad. He was nearly expelled because of a card scandal in his first year. He's very lazy, and I'm sure very much afraid of the examination. Perhaps of the three, he is the only one who might possibly be suspected. Exactly, said Holmes. Now, Mr. Soames, let us have a look at your servant, Bannister. Bannister was a little white-faced, clean-shaven, grey-haired fellow of 50. His hands were shaking. He was so nervous. I understand, began Mr. Holmes, that you left your key in the door. Yes, sir. Was it not rather strange that you should do this on the very day when there were these papers inside? It was most unfortunate, sir, but I've done the same thing at other times. When did you enter the room? It was about 4:30. That is Mr. Soames's tea time. How long did you stay? When I saw that he was out, I left at once. Did you look at the papers on the table? No, sir, certainly not. How did it happen that you left the key in the door? I had the tea tray in my hand. I thought I would come back for the key, then I forgot. Then the door was open all the time. Yes, sir. When Mr. Soames returned and sent for you, you were very much upset. Yes, sir, I nearly fainted, sir. Where were you when you began to feel bad? Where was I, sir? Why, here, near the door. That's strange, because you sat down in that chair near the window. Why did you pass these other chairs? I don't know, sir. I did not matter to me where I sat. I really don't think he knew much about it, Mr. Holmes. He looked very bad, said Mr. Soames. You stayed here when your master left, went on Holmes. Only for a minute or so. Then I locked the door and went to my room. Whom do you suspect? Oh, I don't know, sir. Thank you. That will do, said Holmes. And now, Mr. Soames, I should like to have a look at the three students. Is it possible? No difficulty at all, answered Soames. Visitors often go over to the college. Come along. I shall be your guide. No names, please, said Holmes, as we knocked at Gilchrist's door. A tall young fellow opened the door and very politely invited us into the room. The student left a very pleasant impression. The Indian, a silent little fellow, seemed to be very glad when we said goodbye to him. We did not get into the third room. In answer to our knock, nothing but bad language came from behind the door. "I don't care who you are. You can go to the devil," roared the angry voice. "Tomorrow is the exam, and I won't open my door to anyone." "A rude fellow," said our guide, turning red with anger. "Of course he did not know who was knocking, but anyhow his conduct is rather suspicious." Holmes's reply was indeed strange. "Can you tell me his exact height?" he asked. "Really, Mr. Holmes," answered Soames in surprise, "I can't. He's taller than the Indian, not so tall as Gilchrist." "That's very important," said Holmes. "And now, Mr. Soames, I wish you good night." "Good God, Mr. Holmes, are you going to leave me in this terrible situation?" cried Mr. Soames. "Tomorrow is the examination. I must take some definite action tonight." "You must leave things as they are. I shall come early tomorrow morning, and we shall talk the matter over. I hope that I shall be able to help you. Meanwhile, you change nothing. Nothing at all. Goodbye." "Very good, Mr. Holmes. Goodbye." "Well, Watson, what do you think of it?" Holmes asked, as we came into the street. "There are three men. It must be one of them. What's your opinion?" "The rude fellow on the top floor made the worst impression, but that Indian looked at us in a queer way," I remarked. "So would you, if a group of strangers came in on you when you were preparing for an examination next morning?" "No, I see nothing in it, but that fellow Bannister does puzzle me." "He impressed me as a perfectly honest man," I said. "So he did me. That's all very puzzling. Why should a perfectly honest man..." Holmes stopped and did not say a word more about the case the whole evening. At 8 in the morning, Holmes came into my room. "Well, Watson," said he, "it's time we went down to the college. Soames will be in a terrible state until we tell him something positive." "Have you got anything positive to tell him?" "Well, my dear Watson, I have solved the mystery." "Have you got fresh evidence?" "Aha! It's not for nothing that I got up at 6 and covered at least 5 miles in 2 hours. Look at that." He held out his hand, and I saw 3 little balls of black clay. "Why, Holmes, you had only 2 yesterday, and 1 more this morning. Don't you think, Watson, that the source of number 3 is also the source of numbers 1 and 2? Eh, Watson? Well, come along and let us help Mr. Soames out of his trouble." We found Mr. Soames in a very nervous state. He ran towards Holmes. "Thank heaven you've come. I feared that you should have given up on this case in despair. What am I to do? Shall we begin the examination?" "Yes, of course. Let it begin." "But this rascal..." "He will not take the examination." "You know him?" "I think so. Kindly ring the bell." Bannister entered and stepped back in surprise and fear when he saw Holmes again. "Will you please tell me, Bannister," began Holmes, "the truth about yesterday's incident?" The man turned white to the roots of his hair. "I've told you everything, sir," he said. "Nothing to add?" "Nothing at all, sir." "Well, then I shall help you. When you sat down on that chair at the window, did you do so in order to conceal some object, an object which could have shown Mr. Soames who had been in the room?" Bannister's face was deathly pale.
"No, sir, certainly not."
"Oh, it's only a suggestion," said Holmes very politely. "I can't prove it, but it seems probable enough that when Mr. Soames left the room, you let out the man who had been hiding in the bedroom.
Bannister licked his dry lips. There was no man, sir. Come, come, Bannister. No, sir, there was no one. All right, then, that will do. But please remain in the room, Bannister. Now, Soames, may I ask to go up to the room of young Gilchrist and ask him to step down into yours? A moment later, Soames returned, bringing with him the student. He was tall and very handsome, with a pleasant open face. His troubled blue eyes glanced at each of us and finally rested on Bannister. Now, Mr. Gilchrist, we are all quite alone here. No one will ever know a word of what passes between us. We want to know, Mr. Gilchrist, how you, an honest man, could do such a thing as you did yesterday. The young man looked at Bannister with horror and reproach. No, no, Mr. Gilchrist, cried the servant. I never said a word. But you have now, cried Holmes. Now, Mr. Gilchrist, you must see that your position is hopeless. Your only chance is a frank confession. For a moment, Gilchrist tried to say something, but suddenly he burst into a storm of sobbing. Come, come, said Holmes kindly. We know that you were not the criminal. Don't trouble to answer. I shall tell Mr. Soames what happened, and you listen and correct me where I am wrong. From the moment you told me your story, Mr. Soames, it was clear to me that the man who entered your room knew that the papers were there. How did he know? You remember, of course, that I examined your window. I was thinking of how tall a man must be in order to see, as he passed, what papers were on the writing table. I'm 6 feet high, and I could do it with an effort. So I had reason to think that only a man of unusual height could see the papers through the window. I entered your room, Mr. Soames, and still could make nothing of all the evidence, until you mentioned that Gilchrist was a long-distance jumper. Then the whole thing came to me at once, and I only needed some additional evidence, which I got very soon. What happened was this. This young fellow had spent his afternoon at the sports ground, where he had been practicing the jump. He returned, carrying his jumping shoes, the soles of which, as you know very well, have spikes in them. As he passed your window, he saw, by means of his great height, these papers on your writing table, and understood what they were. No harm would have been done had he not noticed the key, left in the door by the carelessness of your servant. A sudden impulse made him enter your room and see if there were indeed the examination papers. It was not a dangerous action. He could always pretend that he had simply come in to ask a question. Well, he forgot his honour when he saw the Greek text for the examination. He put his jumping shoes on the writing table. What was it that you put on the chair near the window? Gloves, answered the young man. Holmes looked at Bannister in triumph. He put his gloves on the chair, went on Holmes, and he took the examination papers, page by page, to the window table to copy them. He was sure that Mr. Soames would return by the main gate, and that he would suddenly see him. As we know, he came back by the side gate. Suddenly he heard Mr. Soames at the very door. There was no way by which he could escape. He forgot to take his gloves, but he caught up his shoes and rushed into the bedroom. The cut on the desk is slight at one side, but deeper in the direction of the bedroom door. That is enough to show us the direction in which he drew the shoes. Some of the clay round the spike was left on the desk, and a second ball of clay fell in the bedroom. I walked out to the sports ground this morning and saw that black clay is used in the jumping pit. I carried away some of it together with some sawdust, which is used to prevent the athletes from slipping. Have I told the truth, Mr. Gilchrist? Yes, sir, It is true, he said.
Good heavens! Have you got nothing to add? Cried Soames.
Yes, sir, I have. I have a letter here which I wrote to you early this morning, after a restless night. Of course I did not know then that my action was known to everyone. Here it is, sir. You will see that I have written. I've decided not to take the examination. I've found some work, and I shall start working at once.
I am indeed pleased to hear that from you, Gilchrist, said Soames.
But why did you change your plans?
There is the man who sent me in the right path, said the student, pointing to Bannister.
Come now, Bannister, said Holmes. It's clear now to all of us that only you could have let this young man out, since you were left in the room alone.
That's quite clear.
What is not quite clear is the reason for your action.
The reason was simple enough, answered Bannister. Many years ago, I was a butler in the house of this young gentleman's father. When he died, I came to the college as a servant, but I never forgot the family. Well, sir, as I came into this room yesterday, when Mr. Soames was so much upset, the first thing I saw was Mr. Gilchrist's gloves lying in that chair. I knew those gloves well, and I understood immediately what they meant. If Mr. Soames saw them, Gilchrist would certainly be a lost man. I sat down in the chair, pretending that I felt very bad. When Mr. Soames went to you, Mr. Holmes, my poor young master came out of the bedroom and confessed it all to me. Wasn't it natural, sir, that I should save him? And wasn't it natural also that I should speak to him like a father and make him understand that he must not profit by such an action? Can you blame me, sir?
No, indeed, said Holmes heartily, jumping to his feet. Well, Soames, I think we have cleared your little problem up, and our breakfast awaits us at home. Come, Watson. As to you, Mr. Gilchrist, I hope a bright future awaits you. For once, you have fallen low. Let us see in the future how high you can rise.